On today's podcast, I talked to Andy Stevens about the Lakers, Dwight Howard, and the outlook for the upcoming year. Hope you enjoy Fansmanship.com podcast.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. Owen here with Andy today. It is Wednesday. What's the date today, Andy?
Today is the 18th.
What's going
18th,
on?
Yeah.
How you doing today?
Good, good. Glad to be able to have a little long-distance conversation here. Kind of fired up about the Lakers.
Yeah,
a few moves here at the plate.
A little long-distance Lakers podcast, for sure.
There you go.
So there's been a lot of news since we talked last about the Lakers. They're obviously still trying to trade for Dwight Howard, but that's been kind of dwarfed, the Dwight Howard talk, for the Laker fans anyway, by the addition, of course, of Steve Nash, the Suns point guard who was traded to the Lakers. And so what are your thoughts on Nash?
Well, the first thing that I thought about when the Lakers acquired Nash was something I don't know if a lot of people probably thought, well, finally you got somebody that can now implement Coach Mike Brown's pick and roll offense. But I think more than anything else, what the signing of Steve Nash will do for the Lakers, and most notably Kobe Bryant, is that it's going to take a lot of pressure off Kobe, and hopefully he will be able to extend his career maybe another year or two, whereas if you didn't have a guy like Nash, Kobe would still have to take the load of the work, so to speak, and he'd still be, having to have the ball when things would break down inside 5 seconds on the shot clock and, hoisting up a lot of wild shots. I think the acquisition of Nash is really, you are definitely going to see a certain spike in Kobe's field goal percentage, and his field goal shots attempted are also going to go down, which I think is a good thing. So it's definitely, I think the acquisition of Nash is going to take a lot of pressure off of Kobe here in the waning years of his career. So
yeah, his shots, anytime you can get Kobe's shots down a little bit, you're probably feeling pretty good about the world. And Nash is going to be a guy who can distribute. I think there are some misconceptions about Nash, and so I wanted to kind of get those out there too. Nash isn't a 30-35 minute a night guy. He's probably under 30 minutes a night kind of a player on average, and he's a guy who this past year definitely had to sit out some games, and definitely is somebody who, whereas Kobe is going to play every minute that he can, every minute of every game that he can possibly play, I think Nash might rub off on Kobe in kind of a laid-back, I can still be great and laid-back, and it might actually make me more great kind of a way. That's at least my hope as a Laker fan, is that, Kobe's always had this such this intense idea about what it takes to be great, and certainly, he's shown that he's won championships. Nash hasn't won championships. I think they came into the league the same season. And so this idea that Kobe has had that drive, but I think late in his career, I think Kobe has continued to think that he's better than he is. And Nash is somebody who's pretty good, I feel like, at keeping track of who he actually is, what his body is actually able to let him do, and live in reality that way. And I feel like the last maybe year and a half, 2 years, even though Kobe's body got better last year and he seemed like he had a lot more spring in his step, he's not, he's no spring chicken, as they say, and he's not somebody who's going to, still light it up physically for 40 minutes a night for a whole season and be able to carry a team. He had, statistically, not a great year last year, and so hopefully Nash can kind of help him be a little bit more efficient of a basketball player,
yeah.
I think, this year.
Yeah, he was, he ended up the second, I think he lost to Durant by a couple tenths of a point for the scoring title, but that's not, that's not the stat that really matters when it comes to Kobe being efficient. And like I said, I think his, shots go down and his percentage goes up because of a guy like Nash handling the ball. And people also, I think, overlooked at the outset, Nash is one heck of a three-point shooter. I think I heard Steve Kerr on the radio the other day drop some stat that Nash is the only guy in NBA history to have a season where he shot 50% from the field, 40% from three-point land, and 90% from the line. So, you know, he might not have quite that much potential that, I mean, that's during the peak of his career, but he can still get close to those marks, and I think that's going to help the Lakers a lot because that was one of their main problems was efficiency.
Well, that's what I was about to say. Yeah, I mean, you talk about efficiency in general, but a guy who can knock down a three-point shot consistently on a team like the Lakers, and whether they keep Bynum and Gasol both or whether they try to deal Bynum for Howard or however that works, you know, you have at least one big man for next year who is going to, you know, control and cause people to turn their heads. And when they do, Nash is somebody who can make them pay from the outside, even if he has lost a half a step getting by somebody. And I don't know that he has, but even if he has, I mean, he's in his late 30s now. His back hasn't been great. And so I'm sure everything's not exactly the same as it once was, but the idea still is that he's a dominant threat from just a shooting standpoint. If that's all he does, he's still an upgrade from Sessions or Fisher last year. And upgrade from Blake, too, because even when Blake was at his hottest, he wasn't, you know, anywhere near what Nash can be. So, you know,
well,
I think it's...
aside from Nash's shooting, I think that he's also just able to make good choices with the ball, especially when the ball goes inside. The ball goes inside to Pau Gasol. The ball goes inside to Bynum.
Sure.
If they get doubled and the ball is kicked out, not even to Nash, and the ball's moving around the perimeter, he's that type of guy that's able to make that good choice to make the defense pay.
Right.
Be it, you know, get it around the perimeter or ball fake and bring it back the other way or penetrate, get it back to the big man, you know, one more time, something like alley-oop. So, you know, decision-making-wise, the Lakers go from their backcourt, I would say, last year at about a C-plus to a B-minus, now to an A, you know, A-minus A. So
I would have put them at a D last year. I mean, I feel like, you know, Sessions was...
I'm just saying Kobe, too. Overall, backcourt.
And his decision-making is his... probably the worst part of his game in a lot of cases. I mean, he didn't have a lot of options, but, you know, you talk about the shots that he takes, and it's not positive a lot of the time. So, you know, the thing that I told a friend of mine, he said, what do you think about the Lakers and getting Nash? And I said, it basically makes them, you know, instantly relevant again. And I think I wrote that, too, that basically it makes the Lakers instantly a relevant team again. They were bordering at the end of last year on being irrelevant, right? I mean, idea that they had, you know, that they had these two big guys who kind of plotted down the court, and it's everything Jerry Buss never wanted. You know, it's the big guys plotting down the court. It's an old Kobe who can't really elevate over anybody anymore, you know, kind of still getting a lot of shots and figuring it out, kind of, but not in the way that we're used to seeing. So having a guy like Nash in there, and having Nash do, you know, what he does is definitely going to be a welcome sight and a welcome addition to the Lakers this year. Speaking of additions to the Lakers, the next addition, we thought it was going to be Grant Hill following Nash over to the Lakers, but instead it looks like, and I don't know if this is confirmed, it's hearsay and
it's
speculation, but it's Anton Jameson, right?
Yes, Anton Jameson confirmed. Actually, I believe the news was yesterday. It was coming down between the Bobcats and the Lakers, and people were making a big deal because he did play at North Carolina and the Bobcat, and he's from that area, and the Bobcats fan of his hometown team, but he wants a chance at the title. So a lot of mixed emotions. Actually, I think it's a great addition as far as, you know, he might not be, you know, very good defensively, but one thing that he will bring that the Lakers were absolutely anemic at last year, and we're actually the worst bench scoring team in the league, is bench scoring.
Yeah,
he will instantly.
Yeah, sure. What's the one thing that Jameson can do? It's kind of put the ball in the basket regardless of how crappy the guys are around him. And he did it with Cleveland.
Yeah, he just has a knack of kind of keeping the defense, you know, it's not pretty, but he kind of does that little finger roll where it's, it looks like it should be thrown, you know, 20 rows deep into the stands, but he just times it at such an odd time.
Yeah, it's like a quick jump, right? It's a quick jump, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like that little quick jump finger roll that he does. But, and it doesn't have to be, because he averaged 17 and 8 for the Cavs last year in a starting role.
Right.
I mean, if he were to play 20, 22 minutes a night off the bench, it would only have to be 12 and 5 for it to be to make a difference.
Sure, sure. And it's that Lamar Odom role that really the Lakers didn't have last year. It's somebody who can do, you know, a few different things off the bench. He's certainly not going to be able to play the defense that Odom used to play. And he's kind of a goofy guy. I texted somebody about it this morning, and their response to me was yawn. You know, I kind of feel that way, but I also feel that if the Lakers actually think they're going to be good, a guy like Anton Jameson has to have a career year for them. You know what I mean? In other words, he has to, like, step out of his comfort zone and be a guy who, you know, contributes and is a big, you know, I could see Jameson, you know, having 20 or 25 points in a playoff game if this team's going to really make a real run. You know what I mean? It's going to be, there are going to be games when Jameson or you know, guys like Jameson have to kind of step up. And there was really nobody to do that last year. There was nobody even capable of scoring, you know, putting up 25 in a single game.
And that's why people, you know,
beyond Kobe, Bynum, and Gasol.
Well, people scoffing at it or yawning at it, I mean, they're just not paying attention. I mean, the Lakers were the worst bench scoring team in the league. You bring in a guy like Jameson who, for however boring he may be, you know, he's not flashy or anything like that, but he has been consistent for 10 years in the NBA.
Do you remember when he was at North Carolina and he was better than Vince Carter? Vince Carter was like his protege.
He was the best player on the team at North Carolina.
He was one of the best players in the country, as a college player. And it's kind of one of those, you know, he was a great, you know, he had great skills, but he was never a super athletic guy for how tall he was. And he had great skills in college, which helped him.
He just had that knack, like I was talking about with that quick jump finger. He just has knack around the basket, and that's all you need. It doesn't have to be fancy. And that's the perfect type of guy to come off the bench, in my opinion, is a guy that is not necessarily flashy, but just has a knack for getting the ball and the goal, and that's all the Lakers need. They just need to sustain games so they can get their big guns back in towards the end of the second, end of the fourth quarter.
Right.
Last year, their problem was they would just go in the tank. They didn't have anybody that could score, and they would, go on a – the other team would go on 10-0, 12-0 runs on them, and that's, if you bring in a guy like Jameson, that's not going to happen. So,
sure, or maybe that run's more like 10-6 or something like that, and they can kind of hang close at least. I'm thinking about this Lakers team that's upcoming, and, you know, they're going to have a Kobe who's got, 17 years in the league. You're going to have Nash who's got the same number of years. You're going to have either, Bynum or Howard probably, and Gasol being, 30. My question is, this team's going to be, I think, potentially, at least as it's constructed now, kind of similar, maybe not quite as old, right, but similar to the way that the Celtics were constructed last year, kind of giving them another shot, a lot of old guys kind of being together and knowing how to play, and, probably, or maybe even like the Spurs, right? Potentially. I think best case scenario, a lot of old guys kind of knowing how to play together. I'm not going to, dog Kobe and Nash too much, but they are old. I mean, they're getting up there, and being able to get through a team like Oklahoma City, and for sure get through a team like Miami if they ever make the finals, I mean, I guess you cross that bridge when you get to it, but, you look at the athleticism of those teams, and what's winning in the NBA now, and I sometimes kind of wonder, is this all, not is this all kind of a moot point, but it's going to take a lot of things falling into place still for the Lakers to remain, kind of one of the top three teams in the league, along with Oklahoma City and Miami, or to be one of the, do you feel like they're there, one of the top three teams in the league now, along with those two?
Well, I won't go so far to say as I would put them right with Oklahoma City and Miami. I would say if Oklahoma City and Miami were ones, I would put Lakers 1A. But then again, there are also, and I don't fall under this, chain of thought, where that there's a lot of people that say that, you know, the Lakers need Dwight Howard to even be considered, you know, to even feel like they have a shot. Remember last year, you know, the Lakers were a bad run at the end of a game away from giving Oklahoma City a real run for their money. I mean, say what you will about that, but I wouldn't put so much emphasis on how old you may think LA is. Yeah, Kobe's been around a while. Yeah, Nash has been around a while, but they're savvy. They're savvy players.
Okay.
And Pau Gasol isn't even 30 years old, and Andrew Bynum is only 24 years old. You know, Ron Artest, he's in his early
30s. That's right, Ron's
the
still there. I forget that Ron's still there. I don't know if I just kind of wish he wasn't or what, but I definitely forget that. You know, athleticism-wise, it's not super high on the Lakers. Lakers'
again,
priorities.
The same way that Anton Jameson has a certain amount of knack,
right?
Offensively, Ron Artest or better world peace, we'll see what his name actually ends up being coming into the season, has that same sort of knack on the other side of the ball.
That's possible. Sure. I can understand what you're saying there. Yeah, I get it. And we'll see kind of what he has left. I think, you know, if nothing else, the Lakers really made themselves relevant with these players. And they'll be a team worth watching either for the fact that it will or won't work. But they're definitely a team worth watching. And I'm excited to see. I mean, I'm as excited or as intrigued, I guess, by the team. A little technical difficulty there. Andy, you still there?
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that was...
Is that on my end or your end?
That was my end with the recorder. I'll take full responsibility in this case. I did have a point to make, I think, and that is that since the Peyton Malone year, this is the most intrigued I've been by the Lakers, and I feel like that even if it goes up in flames, it won't be any worse than last year when they didn't get close to winning a championship, really. And, I mean, I guess they were in, what, the semifinals of the conference? And I don't think it can be, you know, worse than that as far as, you know, if you're a Laker. I mean, it always can be worse than that, obviously, but it's either a championship or bust for Laker fans. And at the very least, they'll be relevant even if a championship is, you know, remains out of reach potentially.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people that seem to think that Laker fans are spoiled, and we may be to a certain extent.
We are,
but
yeah.
They also think our expectations are too high every year. Like, there's no way you can win a championship there. Well, of course not. You're not going to win one every single year, but to have that expectation is what makes a good franchise great, you know, the same way the New York Yankees have done it in baseball. So I kind of tend to scoff at those people.
Well, and at the same time, it's the same concept that if you're not relevant, you know, be good or bad, just be relevant. And I think, you know, it's the Knicks are a bad example of what the Lakers kind of strive to be, is this idea that whether you're good or you're bad, you're relevant. You have good players, you have names, you have guys that are going to bring people in, you have guys that are going to make people watch. And, you know, the Knicks do it with Amari and Carmelo, who are two, you know, second or third rate players at this point in the league. And, you know, they're superstars because they play in New York, but you know, everybody keeps talking about Carmelo as this guy who the ball has to go through, and I just really I scoff at that because he seems like he's
there's that word again.
he's never in shape enough to be the Carmelo that he was at Syracuse or the Carmelo that he was his first 2 years or so in Denver when he could get to the basket when he wasn't. You know, I feel like if Carmelo lost like 20 pounds, he would.
Okay,
so that was pretty much the number two there. It was a big number two that we just did. So I'm going to try to make sure that this stays on this time. Still getting used to the equipment. Here on the fansmanship.com podcast, apparently,
with Andy, it's
Owen. We are back. Andy, I want to know what your thoughts are on, I know I've alluded to it, on the Dwight Howard situation. Do you think having Nash there will affect Howard and his decision-making, or what's going to affect Dwight Howard and his decision-making. The latest I heard today was that they're having trouble trying to think about the deal because Howard wouldn't sign a long-term deal with the Lakers, and Bynum wouldn't sign a long-term deal with the Magic both. So they're both jacking it up now. What are your thoughts on the Howard trade? Is it going to happen? Do you even want him?
Well, I do know this for certain. It has been explored every which way possible to the extent where the Lakers have included the Houston Rockets, who are also reported to be making a push for Howard, which I'm sure everyone's quite well aware of. A well-documented story that basically has gone nowhere in the past month or so. Well, more than that, really. But at any rate, Houston and also the Cleveland Cavaliers have been reported to be involved as far as if Howard were to go to L.A., then Bynum would go to Cleveland or Bynum would go to Houston, and then Orlando would simply reap the benefits from both teams, so to speak, with young players, young contracts. I did hear that Orlando also kind of wants to get rid of some of their bad contracts if they were to trade Howard, because they'd be in complete, you know, rebuild mode.
Sure.
Two of those bad contracts are Hedo Turkoglu, who I believe is due $16 million per for the next 2 years, and also Jason Richardson, who I would be more...
Jason Richardson, interesting.
Yeah, I would definitely think about if Richardson were involved in a Howard deal, taking on that money. I believe he's only due about $14 million. But then again, then that's another guy off the bench behind Kobe. But he could be the first guy into the game.
I could see Richardson as a real nice Kobe backup and get some playing time.
Or just an Artest backup.
Yeah.
As soon as Artest needs out, Richardson comes in.
Yeah.
When you have that kind of three-man rotation
like
they had last year, we'll have this year, which is kind of a Bynum, Gasol, Jameson thing. At the two and the three, then you kind of have a Kobe, Artest, Richardson type of thing. So there is another possibility there, but anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting. I kind of like that idea of having Richardson, with something to prove, too. And we know that, you know, I'm thinking that Richardson and Nash can play nice, too, pretty well. I mean, that could be a real interesting kind of second unit with, if Nash played with the second unit a little bit, you know, you could have Nash and Richardson and, you know, Gasol with a couple other wing guys who are athletic or something, and really have a more running team rather than the kind of plotting team that they've been the last few years. Real quick.
As far as Howard, though.
What's that?
As far as Howard, real quick before we, you know, because it's been talked about over. But as far as the Lakers are concerned, one thing that is intriguing about Howard is, you know, he is more active without the ball than Andrew Bynum is. So, you know, you have Bynum
setting
and Gasol.
Setting screens, all those things.
Guys.
Yeah.
Well, Bynum and Gasol are both guys that need the ball in the post to be able to score.
Right.
You know, if you do end up trading Bynum for Howard, I think that improves in the sense that Howard is the ultimate kind of garbage guy. You know, you get the ball to Gasol in the post, you know, it's just an endless amount of opportunities for Howard, alley-oops, offensive rebounds. Those are types of things that I don't think, as far as the offensive rebound part, Bynum is just not that active that way.
Sure.
At least not at the level that Howard is. So if it were a Bynum Howard thing and you'd have to take on some salary, as far as Richardson is concerned, I would definitely do it at this point.
Yeah, one thing that I know that the salary cap's a big deal, but when you're the Lakers or the Dodgers, when you're an L.A. team or a New York team, you can't worry about no stinking salary, right? I mean, you really have to just make the call, go for it, and kind of deal with it later on, right? I mean, that's
one of the things
right?
that they said New York was afraid of because, you know, they got rid of Jeremy Lin because in the third year of his contract, they'd be paying $30 million, you know, the $17 million plus $13 against the luxury tax. So that's one of the main reasons why New York got rid of Lin, because they didn't want to pay that $30 million in 2015, it would be.
Sure. So, but you got to, I mean, I don't know. I hate the excuse that it's a salary cap thing when you're in L.A. or New York. I I know that that's kind of, you gotta be reasonable at some level, but I just hate that thought process, that excuse that goes along with that. Speaking of guys like Jeremy Lin, I know you've been watching a little bit of NBA Summer League, and I wanted to kind of get your take on the Lakers team in the Summer League and how they've looked so far.
Well, they've basically got their butts kicked in every game as far as scoreboard is concerned. They got beat by Miami by 50-some points. But you know, this is a team where their leading scorer is Maurice Morris and Andrew Gawdlaw. So they're basically just trying to work these guys out. I definitely see a guy like Gawdlaw making the team, being that kind of 10th to 11th guy. Maurice Morris, I would definitely take Gawdlaw over him for what I've seen. Gawdlaw just has a lot more ways to score. Although Morris has shown in the Summer League, the three games that I've seen, that he is fearless as far as going to the basket, and he's had some nice plays around the rim. I've also looked at the guy they got, the swingman they got in the Ramon Sessions trade. His name is Christian Ayinga. He's really active as far as his defense. Very limited offensively, though. I think Mitch Kupchak kind of thinks that this Ayinga kid's going to be, could potentially be that 10 to 12 minute a guy night behind Kobe when they need to sit Kobe at the end of the first quarter, beginning of the second quarter, you know, so on and so forth. But I just don't see it right now.
I think of him more like a D League guy, right, to start with,
I was also surprised I did not see Devin Ebanks at Summer League. That's a guy that I think that has kind of reached that point where either you're going to develop into something that is going to be something that, you know, can contribute to a team consistently night in, night out, or you're just not. You know, he's at that point, I think, now. Being 24 years old, this will be his, I believe, third year in the league or fourth year in the league.
Right.
So there's another guy that I'm surprised that he hasn't been playing, but the one guy that I did like his energy at the very least was this Robert Sacre kid.
From Gonzaga.
From Gonzaga. He's a 7-footer. He's pretty solidly built. He looks like he's about 260 pounds. Maybe not quite 260, maybe more like 250, but he definitely looks like he has some room to grow as far as his athletic skill and his offensive ability. It looks like that he does have some good moves. He's definitely coordinated. He has a nice little jump hook. So potentially there's a guy that, if they aren't able to re-sign Jordan Hill, could be kind of that hustle guy that you bring in.
Like every other night.
Well, just some defense and rebounding, from the five position, because he is 7 feet tall, legitimately.
He's one of those 7-footers that doesn't really play above the rim. He's one of those 7-footers that is, I feel like a guy like, there are 6'8 guys who play more above the rim. A guy like Trevor Ariza plays probably more above the rim than Sacre, but that doesn't mean that he can't play really good defense and do some other things too.
All right. Well, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. Sacre's shoes don't have concrete in them or by any stretch. Or, I mean, he's not stuck to the ground by any stretch.
No. I mean, yeah.
But it's not jump out of the gym crazy Dwight Howard stuff.
Right.
Really.
Right.
Somewhere in between, I guess you could say, but. As far as their summer league team and filling out the rest of that roster, I mean, I can kind of see the starting five. I can see, of course, Steve Blake being that backup point guard. But who fills in at that 2-3 position as far as the spot we were talking about earlier, if the Lakers were to take on Dwight Howard and Jason Richardson, what if they can't get a guy like that? Who else is out there that are free agents? I've kind of made a short list.
Andy, who else is out there for free agents?
Who else is out there? The top of the list, I would have to put Courtney Lee from Houston. He's a free agent. In fact, I just read an article on BleacherReport.com. Lakers rumors Courtney Lee would be a crucial piece in Kobe's hunt for a sixth ring. It basically goes on about how Lee has shown some interest in the Lakers. He is an unrestricted free agent. The second guy on my list was Nicholas Batum, but it looks like he's going to be, he was a restricted free agent, and the Blazers have said that they'll match any offer that anybody places. So,
yeah, and I think the Timberwolves, placed the offer.
Timberwolves, too.
Yeah, they've been talking about that.
Just real quick, a few other names. Martell Webster, Brandon Rush, C.J. Miles from Utah, kind of a lefty.
Was he on Utah at the end of last year?
I believe so.
Okay. He's young, too, I think.
Someone who I would probably put up right below Courtney Lee would be Carlos Delfino.
Delfino's more of a point guard, though, right? He's more of a hybrid.
He's a small forward, shooting guard. I mean, he's 6'6".
Okay.
He's listed as both a small forward.
That's why I picture him as a hybrid, not point guard, shooting guard, but point guard or shooting guard.
The other two, I think that would also fit that played with Steve Nash last year in Phoenix, because Phoenix is kind of cutting a lot of salary, is Josh Childress, who hasn't really grown into what people thought he might become in college as of yet, but did show some potential last year with Nash. And lo and behold, the last guy on my list, Shannon Brown.
Shannon Brown, yeah. So I have a question. Does Childress still have an afro?
What's that?
I said, does Childress still have the afro going on? My second thing I'll say is that I think I like C.J. Miles the best out of all those guys. I think I like his athleticism. I think I like the fact that he can get real streaky. He's long and lanky, which is, you know, something the Lakers don't have enough of just physically on their team at the guard spot.
Right.
And he's young, so he's got room to grow, I think, still, especially when he gets in.
I believe he's only 24, and this will be a seventh year in the league if he came in.
He came in at like 17 or 18. He was like in Bynum's class maybe, or something like that. One of those last real young groups.
Yeah, C.J. Miles can definitely hit the three too.
Yeah, right, and a lefty, and kind of provides a little bit of a different look, especially if you're coming off the bench and backing up Kobe or something. That's great. So overall, like, your excitement level about the Lakers since the Nash signing and now they got Jameson. What was it before on a 1 to 10 scale, and what is it now?
Before, as far as how excited I was for the season without Nash, but there's nothing in there that's as far as potential for what they're going to do. I was excited about the potential. The way the Lakers sat without Steve Nash or Anton Jameson, I was probably at about a 6, 6.5. You throw in Nash and Jameson, I'm now at about a 9.
About 9.
Dwight Howard, you throw him in the mix, I'm at about an 11.5 out of 10. So,
yeah, if they can somehow swing that and have the Nash, Howard, Kobe, Ron show, Gasol show. I think Gasol's really going to be the key to making Nash's game really good. I really think that it's going to be all about can Gasol really kind of come back out of his shell that he went into last year. I mean, they really went away from him, and he lost a lot of confidence.
Well, see, that's why I think Howard is so vital, because Bynum is just a catch the ball in the post, still hasn't learned how to pass out of the double team, you know, dummy, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, yeah, he's a little more skilled offensively than Howard. The Lakers don't need that. Nash having the ball, you don't want to just feed it into Bynum and then just watch him dribble and get the ball taken away from him after 10 seconds of dribbling. That's not the offense Lakers are running now. So, you know, I think Howard would be a more ideal fit than Bynum, without a doubt. It would allow Powell to do what he does best, so to speak, I guess.
Yep. All right. Well, Andy, it's been fun, and I hope you have a good rest of your day, and we'll talk soon again, and let's cook up if the Lakers ever do make this Howard thing again.
Without a doubt. And one more thing before I let you go, I just wanted to know who you playing in fantasy baseball this week.
This week, the Sweet Hamilton's.
The Sweet the sweet Hamel toes, baby, without their toes. Joey Votto. Joey Votto is on the DL, but the Hamel toes still have a quite a lengthy lead here. But
a healthy lead.
It is only Thursday, so we'll see. It looks like the Brawny men have six more starts.
You mean the BMs?
The BMs and the Hamiltons only have four, so I think it's going to come down to the wire.
I think the BMs are toast. I think unless some of the guys on my team can really start to play like they're supposed to, it's going to look really bad. And I'm trying to get rid of one of my catchers. So if you have a want for a catcher, then you know feel free to make me an offer. I think you have Carlos Ruiz though. So
I think Carlos Ruiz is doing just fine.
Yeah.
Also, were you able to do a podcast with Jesse? Did that ever happen?
Coming up on Friday,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll look forward to that.
All right, Andy, and maybe we can call you and bring you in. All right, man, I'll talk to you soon. Have a great day.
All right, have a safe flight back home.